Welcome to the market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Chicago, Friday, August 4th. Hello, everyone. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson, looking at another fascinating, interesting, record-setting week on Wall Street. Make it 8 days in a row that the Dow has closed at a record high. And part of the reason during the week, Apple hit a new all-time high. And the story in the market today, an employment report that was definitely friendly. So before we look at the details of the market, let's look at some details of that jobs report for this first Friday of August. Employers hired more workers than expected in July. Not only that, raised their wages. That's a sign of the labor market tightness that likely clears the way for the Federal Reserve to announce a plan to start shrinking its massive bond portfolio. Here are the numbers. The Labor Department said non-farm payrolls increased by 209,000 jobs, and that was well above expectations of 189,000 by analysts and investors. And June's employment gain was revised upward to 231,000 from the previously reported 222,000. And then the average hourly earnings went up 9 cents, that's 0.3% in July, after going up 0.2% in June. The biggest increase in 5 months, and on a year-on-year basis, wages increased 2.5% for the fourth straight month. One analyst said it was strong across the board. It puts the Fed still on track to start the program to wind down the book in September, and it's a long ways off in December for the next rate hike. But economists expect the Fed will announce a plan now to start reducing its $4.2 trillion portfolio of Treasury bonds and mortgage-backed securities at its next policy meeting in September. The Fed bought these securities to lower interest rates in the wake of the 2007-2009 financial crisis. But the labor force participation rate, or the share of working-age Americans who are employed or at least looking for a job, rose 0.1%. So, all in all, an employment report today that came as a very pleasant surprise to a lot of the traders on Wall Street. So, let's look at the day's action as we ended this first week of August. The Dow, as we said, up for its eighth straight record high. Gains in J.P. Morgan and other banks after data showed the employers hired more workers than expected in July. And with banks standing to benefit from higher interest rates, the S&P Financial Index today rose 0.75%. Goldman Sachs up 2.5%, the top contributor to the Dow's gain for the day. Now, perceived chances of an interest rate hike by the U.S. Central Bank by the end of the year increased to 50% from 46% after the release of the data, and that's according to CME Group's Fed Watch tool. Analysts on average expect S&P 500 earnings to have grown 12% in the second quarter, and they project earnings up 9.3% for the September quarter. The utilities, healthcare, and consumer staples indexes fell today. Gilead's down drop of 1.2%. And AGN's percent loss of 3% weighed on the healthcare index. Walt Disney fell 1.3%, biggest drag on the Dow. Viacom down 13.8% after the company forecast a low single-digit dip in sales. But today, the stock of Yelp jumped 27%. after the company said it would sell its Eat24 business to Grubhub for $287 million. Grubhub stock rose a little more than 9% for the day. Oil prices higher today after the strong U.S. jobs report. U.S. crude oil today rose 55 cents a barrel. That's up a little more than 1%. It settled and ended the week at $49.58. Crude futures had been trading lower before the jobs report brought buying into the market. So that's a little bit of what happened to end this week, and again, another significant week in the stock market. So let's look ahead to next week as we continue earnings report season and government reports and speaking engagements by some of the regional governors of the Federal Reserve. But next week, inflation data could offer some clues on the timing of the next interest rate increase from the Federal Reserve. Data from the Labor Department on Friday expected to show that the consumer price index increased 0.2% in July after being unchanged in June. And other reports due next week include second quarter productivity data from the Labor Department on Wednesday. The Labor Department expected to report on Thursday that the producer price index for final demand rose 0.1% in July after a similar increase in June. Some of the earnings reports. Well, media company and theme park operator Walt Disney expected to post an increase in third quarter revenue, helped by the success of its latest releases, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, the fifth installment of Pirates of the Caribbean, and Cars Number 3. 21st Century Fox reports fourth quarter results on Wednesday. That company is owned by Rupert Murdoch. It's expected to report an increase in quarterly revenue, helped by strong performance in its cable business. Snap Incorporated reports second quarter results on Thursday. The company expected to report an increase in quarterly revenue. And then on Thursday, we also get reports from retailers, continuing to be challenged, of course, by online shopping. And that is a growing concern. Kohl's, Macy's, and Nordstrom will report second quarter results on Thursday as they continue to struggle with weak mall traffic at their stores and tough competition from online retailers and off-price stores. JCPenney reports second quarter results on Friday. The company had warned its closure of 130 to 140 stores would hurt gross margins in the second quarter. And the retailer, like rivals Kohl's and Macy's, struggling with declining mall traffic as well as tough competition from online retailers. Time Incorporated reports second quarter results on Tuesday. The publisher of People and Fortune magazines expected to report a drop in quarterly revenue and in profit. Drug maker Mylan, which came under intense regulatory scrutiny over pricing of its emergency allergy shot EpiPen, expected to report higher second quarter earnings when it issues its report this week. Tribune Media Company reports second quarter results on Wednesday. The U.S. broadcaster expected to report a drop in quarterly revenue hurt by lower ad revenue from its television and entertainment business. And, of course, in May, Sinclair Broadcast said it would buy Tribune Media for $3.9 billion and assume about $2.7 billion in debt. NVIDIA Corporation reports second quarter results on Thursday. GoDaddy reports second quarter results on Tuesday. And burger chain Wendy's expected to report second quarter sales above analysts' average estimates on Wednesday, as it looks to benefit from new menu items and some refranchising efforts on the part of the company. the main economic, let's look north to our neighbors there, Canada, because there the main economic data next week will be the housing starts due on Wednesday. And then Canada-based Valiant Pharmaceuticals International reports second quarter results on Tuesday. Then the fertilizer maker Agrium in Canada expected to report a smaller second quarter profit. We certainly saw that this week in reports from CF Industries and from Mosaic coming in with disappointing results. So a lot going on in the market starting next Monday. Marriott International, world's biggest hotel chain, will be reporting. CBS Corporation will report. And on Monday, meat processor Tyson Foods will be reporting its earnings as well. So a lot going on in the market, a lot going on in the agricultural market. Weather, of course, the main factor this time of the year. So stand by as Max Armstrong is joined by our market guest for the week when we continue on the markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Naomi Bloom joining us in the studio from Stuart Peterson this weekend. Well, here we are. The early part of August. Recent days, they've been out there surveying the fields. They've been calling up producers. I think they survey something like 22,000 producers for the August crop report. And then the numbers come out here in the week ahead, reflecting conditions as of August 1st.
Yes.
What do you think we'll see in terms of the yield projections that USDA will come out with? Do you have your own numbers in mind, Naomi?
Well, I'm thinking that the USDA is going to stay with a conservative number. That just seems to be their mojo. I would think that for corn, they can't deny the situation out there anymore, so they're going to do a reduction. But what we're hearing lately from other analysts in the industry, they're looking for yields of 162 or 163, and I don't think the USDA is going to be that generous in their yield cuts. I would be shocked. I will buy you a steak dinner if they do anything more than drop it 3 points for yield on that report, because I just don't see them being that generous to the market in terms of making yield that small. So I'm thinking they'll come out with yield at 168 for the report, but I don't think they're going to touch soybeans at all. It's just a little too early yet. And
so where would that put the bean yield?
48. I think they're going to keep it right at 48.
And some of the early numbers that we've seen circulating around seem to indicate that USDA will be pretty close to that at this point. I mean, they're not thinking much below 47 or so.
Right, because obviously it's a little too early yet. But when you look back at the good to excellent categories during this time of year where it's been similar, the yields end up either right at trend line or they're drastically lower, like 3 bushels to the acre lower. So I think they're going to stick with that conservative number, especially when we have a cooler August than what many were anticipating. And some of the rains that have been coming through recently, they're going to, I think, just keep it conservative with 48.
The tendency for that soybean number is to climb. I mean, I looked back over the past 21 years, 14 of those 21 years, the final number on beans was higher than the August crop report.
Yeah, that's true. And that is something that could absolutely happen. Statistically speaking, though, I'm thinking that just I'm going off of weekly crop progress reports, that they'll keep it at trend line just because the crop, you know, you got 14% of our crop grown in North and South Dakota, and it's dire there. And Minnesota looks good. Wisconsin looks good, but we don't count. So it's just, I don't think that you're going to see it on this report. Could it happen down the road? Sure, depending on how the rest of August fares for weather.
Then there's the acreage number. They won't mess with that until October, correct?
That's what I think. So but what I don't know is, you know, we keep talking about spring wheat with the abandoned acres. And I don't know. I've been looking for the answer if they would address that on this report, or does that come in October? Do you know? I'm not even sure.
I think in the past, they just haven't adjusted it until October. But we'll see, I guess.
Yeah. So then the only thing we'll see on this report then is to make sure that demand can stay constant and they don't come up with bigger old crop ending stocks that would surprise the market like it did from that last USDA report, and we'll want to keep an eye on yield. But making sure demand stays strong is important, too.
What do you think that ending stocks number might do, just judging by what we've been exporting, judging by our domestic use, our ethanol usage? Ethanol production is up from a year ago, is it not?
It is. And we are on target for what the USDA is looking for, because the USDA had said that we're going to be using more corn for ethanol for this year. And so we're on track for that. So I don't think we're going to see any adjustments there. What I'm curious is if maybe we're going to see more corn use for feed, because the animals that are coming to market are suddenly weighing a little bit more. And I'm just thinking feed is cheap, so maybe we're going to see that increase. But otherwise, I don't think this report's going to do much of anything. I think it'll be a dud.
You think it could be a dud?
I think it's going to be
a non-event. Then we'd move on to August weather.
Right, exactly. And then start talking about outside market news. A lot of people thinking about crude oil as far as is OPEC, are they going to start to go back to increasing production like they're going to be, like I think it's like March 2018 is when they're supposed to allow the increases. So outside markets with crude oil, we're going to be looking at the dollar, keeping an eye on the stock market. Those are going to be the things that drive us if we don't have anything to talk about on this report and if weather stays pretty calm and quiet.
Weather, though, will still be the big factor, overriding those outside markets, will it not? I mean, you talk about those other things, and they're not insignificant, but it seems like when you really get down to the nitty-gritty, it's weather and the most immediate demand.
Well, it is, absolutely, and that's what drives the market in the shorter term with the day trading. If you step back and look at the bigger picture, this market hasn't done a darn thing for a year. Corn's been in a 40, 45-cent trading range.
Very narrow range, hasn't it?
Yeah. You know, since October. And even soybeans have been in the same big sideways trading range since last summer. So we're still stuck in those ranges. And like you said, you know, waiting for weather, waiting to see what the perception of ending stocks becomes, what the final results will be. But we obviously won't get those until closer to January. And then we're going to start talking about South American weather. So I think, though, the good news is that the perception of ending stocks is that they're done getting bigger. And now we're putting the brakes on, and we're going to start to see them slowly get smaller. So that at least sets the stage for firm prices. But without a major weather issue, we don't have a reason to rally substantially.
Lest we forget, there is still that Safrinha corn crop to be marketed, correct? I mean, that thing is hanging over the corn market, is it not, from South America?
Absolutely, you're right. And they've had decent crops in South America and with the corn. And so they are a competition, even more so than previous years. Mexico, you know, they're doing what they can do to just be ready to offset anything that would happen with NAFTA. So they've already opened the door to Brazilian imports of corn. So that is something that's going to keep pressure on the market, along with all of the old crop that's now finally starting to get dumped onto the U.S. market as well. So in the short term, we've got a little bit of an uphill battle. But again, because the yields in the country probably really are going to end up down at 163 come January, that's going to just keep prices firm for the short term.
Quickly, let me circle back to acreage for just a moment.
Yeah.
Eastern Corn Belt acreage. Did USDA in the June report fully account for the corn acreage that did not get planted or maybe got planted and wound up not being a productive crop after all?
Good question. I don't know is the answer. I'm not even sure. So I would say if you've heard anything, it would probably be more than what I've been hearing, because those are things that we've been looking for, too, and clients have been asking us, and I don't know is the answer.
Talking about long-term demand, let's talk about China for a moment. Now, they have very bountiful supplies of old crop corn sitting around, do they not?
They do, but to my understanding, they have now used up half of that rotten corn that's been sitting there. So they are working through it, and their crop is smaller this year than it has been in previous years because they have had some weather issues as well. And you're seeing them doing some importing from various countries around the world. So they are bringing in some fresh corn to continue to blend with the old nasty corn that's been sitting there, and they're using it up. So that, in the longer term, continues to be a friendly story where China, in the bigger picture, give it 5 years, they're going to be importers of corn without a doubt. unless they can get their genetics caught up by then or their precision planting, but I don't think they can get it done in 5 years. So there's a friendly long-term demand story, too.
I've heard some people say that they're probably not going to be inclined to want to produce their entire corn crop there, that they would be increasingly, some people think, turning to the world for their corn in China.
Well, that's kind of what they did with soybeans. And so, you know, I would absolutely see that as a possibility where they would grow what they can grow. But if you can import it from various points around the world with, you know, and they buy from Ukraine, they'll buy from South America, they'll buy from us. So they'll get what they need when they need it. But they're also going to still be producing somewhat at home.
When a grower calls you and says, okay, what do we do here now? What do you share with them these days?
Yeah, well, with the biggest thing that we're getting calls on right now is guys just throwing in the towel with the old crop. So for those who have been doing that, we're saying your basis probably isn't going to improve much unless you're in the Dakotas, where basis is actually improving. But everywhere else, it's going to probably have basis stay wide until winter. So we've been saying, okay, if you're selling it, look to re-own it. But we're actually starting to go out to July of 2018 with call options or bull call spreads, things with low risk right now, but could have pretty decent rates of returns down the road. So we're looking at that. In terms of pricing new crop, I think a lot of guys did ahead of that USDA report. I know I was able to get a call out to all of my clients 2 hours before the report, and I said, you know what? If we don't get anything really, really friendly, we're going to drop like a rock. So make sure you get some cash sales made for old and new crop. And so I really do think that guys got something done, but you're going to see a post-harvest rally because the further that those combines go north, the yield is really, I don't think, going to be there to the extent that people are thinking, especially when I'm talking to my clients in Iowa, obviously the Dakotas. It really seems like Minnesota, Wisconsin are the best places, or parts of eastern Iowa or northern Illinois. So sweet, my clients in Indiana, their joke was, well, at least the corn is now tall enough that they can't see, you know, the
right
crappy spots in the field. So
They are out there, but they get up in an airplane and fly low, or they put the drone out over the field. Doggone it, those holes are pretty obvious out there.
Yeah, they are. So I think with one standpoint, just really be patient. You'll get your post-harvest rally. It's going to come in the form of futures, though. So you'll be able to do some hedge to arrives and then get your basis locked in this winter.
Don't take your eye off the ball, growers, I suppose
right.
You would say.
Exactly.
Naomi, thank you. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Naomi Bloom from Stuart Peterson.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Well, guess what our Secretary of Agriculture is doing over this weekend? He's on an RV and visiting several states in the United States. It's a 5-state RV trip. It's titled Back to Our Roots. And it's a tour to gather input on restoring rural prosperity and the 2018 Farm Bill. So far on his RV tour, Back to Our Roots, Secretary Perdue has met with farmers, ranchers, foresters, producers, students, governors, members of Congress, USDA employees, and other stakeholders to ensure good, facts-based, data-driven decisions as USDA becomes intimately involved with Congress in its deliberation and formulation of the 2018 Farm Bill. I like it. Secretary of Agriculture on an RV tour. Well, here's an annual event for you in South America. We have truck drivers that are impeding the movement of grain to the ports. Happens every year about this time. This time it has caused one exporter group, ANEC, to send an official communication to foreign buyers saying that protests by truck drivers in the country might delay grain loading operations at Brazilian ports. The export group said currently there are enough stocks in exporting ports to continue loading ships, but possible delays could occur if the protests continue for a long time. Happens every year, so They truck drivers take advantage of the need to get grain and soybeans to shipping ports to fulfill foreign commitments that they have already made. Now, if you're an almond lover, good news. California almond growers are looking at the biggest crop ever. Money does grow on trees, and it's in the form of 2.25 billion pounds of nuts predicted to be harvested starting this month. And here is another stunning number. California provides more than 80% of the world's almond production. 80% of all of the almonds produced in the world come out of California. So let's look at where we're going to start the trade in the grain market on Monday. The September wheat contract dropped 2.25 cents today, so it'll start Monday morning at $4.54¾ a bushel. September corn will start at $3.66½ a bushel after gaining 3¼ cents today. December corn will start at $3.81 Monday after gaining 3¾ cents. Soybeans, on the other hand, the August contract down $0.01½, so we'll start trading August beans $9.49¼. And then the November bean contract will start at $9.56¾. It lost 3½ cents in today's trade. And in livestock futures at the Mercantile Exchange, where will we start? August lean hogs will start at $83.22 a hundredweight after gaining $1.15 today. But that contract will terminate August 14th. October hogs gained $1.35 today, so they'll start Monday at $66.77. Meanwhile, cattle trade. The August live cattle contract dropped 12 cents a hundredweight today. It'll start Monday at $115.45. The August feeder cattle contract dropped $1.05 today, and they will start trading Monday morning at $149.95. So that's where we're going to start the trade on Monday. And in the meantime, a couple of reports this week that really will be watched carefully by the trade. The report on supply-demand, and we get the first real crop report of the season, based not on estimates or projections, but based on field surveys. The August crop report does that. So on Thursday, as you heard in Max's visit with Naomi, we're going to be taking a close watch at the August crop report. And then we wait till the September report to see how much they make the change. One other note that I found interesting this week, maybe some of you or many of you have done as I have done, visited the world's biggest fish market in Tokyo. I was there early in the morning on one of my trade missions to Japan, and it's a huge, well, it's the world's biggest fish market. It had a fire this week. Took 44 fire trucks, and I don't know how many firemen to douse the blaze, but it certainly made the news. Well, thank you for joining us along with Max Armstrong. I'm Orion Samuelson. That's our time on this week's The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.